What is going on, Rams fans, and thank you for tuning in to another episode of the Rams Wire Podcast. I'm your host, Cameron DeSilva. You can follow me on Twitter at Cam DeSilva. You can follow us on Twitter at the Rams Wire. And as always, be sure to check out theramswire.usatoday.com to stay updated on everything surrounding the Rams, from transactions, trades, recent games, and analysis. We've got it all. We'll keep you covered throughout the season. So we've got an episode today where we're going to recap the Saints game, the Rams' first loss of the season, talk about what it means for their playoff implications, how it affects their race to the number one seed in the NFC. Obo Garankuwo is back. He's been activated from the PUP list, and he's on the active roster. Marcus Peters has really struggled in recent weeks. We're going to take a little bit of time to talk about that and what it could mean for the Rams and how they can fix it. And then we'll preview the upcoming game against the Seahawks. It's week 10 on Sunday at 4:25. That game's going to be at home. It's their first home game against the Seahawks this season. Obviously, their second against Seattle this year. So we'll preview that, get you rolling for week 10, and we'll get going right into it. So on Sunday, the Rams did lose their first game of the season. Obviously, I'm sure you caught the game. The final score is 45-35. I was off on my prediction. I think I called 31-28. The Rams would win. So I was off by a little bit there. But it was a close game, back and forth. Saints jumped out to a 21-point lead at one point in the first half. Rams fought back. They tied the game at 35, and then the Saints just scored the final 10 points. Really, it was a game of streaks. They each scored touchdowns on their first two possessions. Then the Rams scored a whole. Then the Saints scored. I think it was 21 straight points. The Rams came back with 21 consecutive points of their own, and then the Saints pulled away with 10 points in the fourth quarter to beat the Rams and kind of prevent them from having a chance to come back and get the win. Obviously, the biggest play of the game, I would say, is that 72-yard touchdown to Michael Thomas over Marcus Peters. Really, the straw that broke the camel's back, the nail in the coffin. At that point, the Saints were only up 3 points. If the Rams get a stop on that drive, they have a chance to come back and either tie it or win it. But Marcus Peters didn't have good coverage on arguably the best receiver in the league right now. He went for 72 yards. Thomas on the day had something like 12 catches, 200 and I want to say 11 yards and a touchdown. Really just a phenomenal game from him. Something we're accustomed to seeing from the Saints receiver, who's really their only number one, their only go-to option at wide receiver. Tre'Quan Smith, their number two, had 2 catches for 23 yards. So really no production out of the other receivers. They didn't need any. They just signed Dez Bryant, who's going to come in probably as their number two, number three option. But it was the Michael Thomas show. He was shadowed by Marcus Peters throughout the game, got the better of him, and it showed in the stat sheet. It showed on the film. There was nothing about this game that Marcus Peters did well compared to Michael Thomas. It was constant lapses in coverage, poor coverage on Marcus Peters' part. In that final play, you could see him before the snap. He was trying to talk to his teammates, get some of the coverage worked out, figure out what the play call was, got beat off the line and breezed through a perfect pass over the top of Peters into Thomas's arms, and he went for 6. One thing that's gotten overlooked a little bit, I think, as far as this game goes, is the performance that Jared Goff had. I posted a film breakdown on Wednesday, just taking a look at his best throws, a couple of bad decisions, that one of which cost the Rams a handful of points, but really just such a good game for him. He went 28 for 40, 391 yards, 3 touchdowns. I want to say it was his second highest yardage total in the NFL. He had a 115.7 passer rating. So all the stats were there for the young quarterback. And he went toe-to-toe with Drew Brees. There's no way around that. Brees went 25 for 36, 346 yards, 4 touchdowns, no picks, and a passer rating of 137. So he had the better numbers, a little bit fewer yards, but these guys went blow for blow, back and forth. all game long, and to see Goff go head to head with a future first ballot Hall of Famer, you gotta like what he showed. You gotta like the throws that he made. It was a really strong performance from him. Like I said, I did do a film breakdown. I looked at some of his better throws, one of which was an incompletion to Tyler Higbee, which would have gone for a touchdown. I'm sure you guys remember which throw, but there's an angle of that pass that really just shows how on the money the throw was and how easy of a catch it really was for Tyler Higbee to make. Todd Gurley was shut down a little bit, 79 yards on just 19 touches. Sean McVay tried to get him going in the passing game. He fed him six receptions, Jared Goff targeted him seven times. He only had 11 receiving yards. Eight of those came on one play, so there's not much else you can do to get him the ball where he's going to be in a position to succeed when he only has six catches for 11 yards. The Saints did say afterwards they keyed on stopping him. They knew they couldn't stop all of the Rams' weapons, so they focused their attention on Gurley, rightfully so. And they did what they could to stop him and really slow down the offense the best they could. It worked. And the offense, obviously, Goff had a big day, and the total yardage was 483 yards for the Rams. But to limit Todd Gurley to 68 yards rushing and 11 yards receiving, that's a good game for a defense against the Rams. On the other side of the ball, Aaron Donald, he did have four quarterback hits. Neither quarterback was sacked. None of them were taken down once. But he did have four quarterback hits, which were the only hits that the Rams got on Drew Brees all game long. So he was really one of the only productive defensive players for the Rams. But it was a good game from him, just not what we're accustomed to seeing. That one play that he had, the tackle for loss on Alvin Kamara, I don't know how he got to the backfield so quick, but that's just the way that he plays. That's what we've come to expect from him on a weekly basis. The tight ends did get involved. Gerald Everett had three catches for 48 yards. Tyler Higbee added another 40 yards on two catches. He had that nice 33-yarder down the left side. He broke open. Goff hit him for a big gain. Good to see them get going. Goff did look their way nine times, which is more than Brandon Cooks. Same number of times he looked at Robert Woods. Cooper Kupp had six targets. So Goff did look their way. They were getting open, and they did make a few nice catches in traffic, particularly Everett there. So good to see them get going. Hopefully McVay can continue to incorporate them into the offense. I really think Gerald Everett can be a dynamic player for the Rams, especially with all the attention that's being focused on Todd Gurley, Brandon Cooks, Robert Woods, Cooper Kupp. You have so many playmakers. They're always in 11 personnel, always one tight end on the field. If you can get single coverage on Everett running in the middle, kind of like Jordan Reed did for the Redskins when McVay was there, that's a really dangerous proposition. And I think that's something that the Rams definitely have to exploit, try to take advantage of, and get him more involved. Higbee, he's a better blocker. He's a bigger target. But he's had a few drops that should have been caught, like the one on Sunday against the Saints. And then obviously Dante Fowler Jr. debuted for the Rams. He had one tackle for loss. He had a few quarterback pressures. He didn't really get to Drew Brees much. He did bat down a pass and have one tackle. But I would say kind of an underwhelming debut for him. He was going up against Terron Armstead, who's really a Pro Bowl quality tackle on the left side. So not an easy matchup there. But good to see him in a 3-4 defense. Getting going from that outside linebacker position, and hopefully he'll continue to improve. That's the expectation. He can be a really good player for the Rams opposite Ebukam at that outside linebacker position. So hopefully he'll continue to get better in Wade Phillips' defense, and then we'll go from there. And obviously they have the pressure that's coming from the interior of Donald Sue and Brockers, but adding that presence on the outside, someone who can really bend the edge, force the quarterback to step up in the pocket, that's going to make a big difference for the defense this season. As far as what this game means for the Rams' playoff hopes, obviously they're still going to make the playoffs. The Seahawks, they're not going to come back to catch the Rams in the NFC West. They're 3.5, they're 4.5 games down. They're 4-4. Rams are 8-1. Even if the Seahawks win on Sunday, they're 5-4. Rams are 8-2. That's a wide gap to close in the final, what, 6 weeks of the season, six games of the season. I just personally don't see it happening. The Rams have the inside track for that division. They would get a wild card spot anyway. There's just simply no way the Rams are going to miss the playoffs. What it does mean, however, is that they no longer have. Right now, they do have the number one seed in the NFC, but they don't have. They can't control their own fate, so to speak, as so many people like to say. They're not in the driver's seat. That belongs to the Saints now. They are half a game behind, but because they have played one fewer game, they do have an opportunity to get a win, tie the record, and then if it does come down to it, they own the tiebreaker between them and the Rams because they did win this game. So not great news for the Rams there. A win on Sunday would have pushed it to 2.5 games, would have made it really difficult for any team to catch them in the NFC. But I mean, it's not the end of the world. This team is too good. They have an easier schedule than the Saints. If you look at the Saints' schedule, by no means do they have an easy path to the playoffs. They're most likely going to make the playoffs, but they do still have to play the Bengals, the Eagles, the Falcons, the Cowboys, the Bucks, the Panthers, the Steelers, and then the Panthers again. So that final three games against the Panthers twice and the Steelers once, that's not an easy path to the postseason after to end the regular season. They could easily go 0-3. They could easily go 2-1. You don't really know, but compare that to the Rams, who finish with the Eagles, the Cardinals, and the 49ers. It's easy to see that the Rams have a far clearer path to the number one seed, especially being half a game up already. They have one fewer game to play. It's hard to see them not getting that number one seed. I don't really see the Panthers coming back from 6-2 to steal it away. Really, the next five games are going to determine it for the Rams. They play the Seahawks, Chiefs, Lions, Bears, and Eagles. If they come out of those five games at, say, 4-1, it's hard to see them losing this race for the number one seed. And even if they don't get it, they're going to get the second spot. They're going to have a first round bye. They're going to get that rest that that Sean McVay so covets, as far as keeping his players healthy and keeping them fresh for the postseason and for the regular season, like we saw this year. Really, no worry there. I can't see them at all missing out on either the number one or the number two seed. So this loss hurts, but it's certainly not the end of the world. There's no reason to panic. Obviously, Marcus Peters has struggled, but I mean they're going to get it fixed. Aqib Talib is going to come back soon, and that secondary is going to get rolling. Another bit of news that did happen this week: you had Obo Okoronkwo, the rookie from Oklahoma. He was activated from the PUP list. He's on the 53-man roster. That doesn't mean he's going to play on Sundays, but it is a good step for his availability moving forward and his chances of contributing this season. He broke his foot in the off season, very early in the off season. I think it was in spring workouts. It was shortly after the draft. So he was sidelined through training camp, through mini camp, through rookie mini camp. The first 6 weeks of the season, he was on PUP list, not even able to practice. So really, he wasn't on the field at all from, say, May until 3 weeks ago. So the fact that he's activated now, he can continue practicing, he can suit up on game days, he can learn from, say, Dante Fowler Jr., Aaron Donald, Matt Longacre. He can be in those guys' ears and really learn some pass rushing moves and kind of the ins and outs of Wade Phillips's defense. Like I said, it's not certain that he's going to dress on game days. Sean McVay said that this week. He said it's still to be determined whether he's going to be on that 46-man game day roster. As you know, teams have to make seven players inactive each week. Obviously, it can vary from week to week. The Rams have kind of stuck by a very similar group of players who have not played. Your Tanzel Smarts, your John Kellys, Your backup pass rushers, Trevon Young was inactive for a few weeks, but Okoroko, there's a good chance he's going to be among those inactives this week and maybe the next week as he kind of finds his footing in the NFL. He hasn't, like I said, he hasn't really gone full speed in practice or in games since his time at Oklahoma. So there's still some kinks to work out, I'm sure, some moves to learn, and really the scheme that he has to become familiar with. So really it's great to have him back, but I would temper your expectations just a little bit. He was a fifth round pick. He is a little bit undersized, so don't expect him to come in this week and have three sacks. If he gets three sacks the rest of the season, that would be huge. I don't even really see him getting that many, especially with Dante Fowler there, especially with Ebukam. Matt Longacre is still playing, John Franklin Myers. So it's not like he's going straight to the top of the depth chart. He's got to work his way up. He's got to prove that he can contribute and make plays as a pass rusher before he's called upon regularly. So obviously good to have him back, but maybe just tap the brakes a little bit on Okoronkwo being that stud pass rusher that everyone wants him to be. With him being signed to the active roster, Trevon Young was waived, and then on Wednesday he was re-signed to the practice squad. So Rams get their late-round pick back. He passed through waivers, obviously. Nobody claimed him, which isn't really that surprising, and he reverts to the practice squad. As far as the biggest topic of this week, I would say that is the play of Marcus Peters. He was obviously not good on Sunday against the Saints. He was not good against the Vikings. He was not good against the Seahawks. So he's had some really tough weeks. He knows full well that he hasn't been very good in the past few weeks. He admitted that he hasn't been playing well, and he knows that he has to get better. He said he's still a top corner. I kind of minced his words and took out some of the expletives that he used. But I mean, he needs to play better. Whether it's taking him off of number one receivers, whether it's putting him in more zone coverage where he can keep his eyes on the quarterback and make plays on the ball, and he's not the single guy who's covering a receiver, the Rams need to figure out what they're going to do with him. Some people think he's playing himself out of a contract in LA. He's obviously under contract through next season with the fifth-year option, but the Rams ideally would like to sign him long-term before that to kind of avoid any contract discussions and distractions throughout the season. But are you really comfortable giving him a long-term deal right now with the way that he's playing? I would say no, but there's obviously a chance that he's going to get better. He was good in the first, say, month of the season when Aqib Talib was there. He's just fallen off in recent weeks against the Packers, against the Saints. So he really needs to step it up if this defense wants to go anywhere. Troy Hill is you can't rely on him to be a number one cornerback. You can't expect him to shadow top receivers. Mikel Roby Coleman, teams are finding ways to keep him off the field by going with heavier packages instead of three receivers. So he's playing limited. Really, it's all about Peters and Troy Hill right now. Sam Shields can't find the field. So both of those guys really need to step up in the coming weeks, especially against a team like the Seahawks with Russell Wilson. You got Patrick Mahomes, you got Matt Stafford, and then Carson Wentz. So you got some good quarterbacks coming up, and Talib is only going to return in week 13 after the bye. So you got two more weeks to go against Wilson and Patrick Mahomes. So hopefully after that, the Rams will improve. Peters will get better. Troy Hill hopefully will be better as a number three or four receiver, or excuse me, cornerback. And then you go from there once you get Aqib Talib back. So that's kind of where the secondary is at right now. LaMarcus Joyner is finding his footing. John Johnson is one of the best safeties in the league, I would say. So it's mostly just that cornerback position that's really holding back the Rams defense right now. Speaking of the Seahawks, we'll talk about this preview a little bit. It's obviously their second game against Seattle. The first one was in week five weeks ago. The Rams won that one 33-31. It was a lot closer than people expected. I, for one, thought it was going to be a much wider margin, but the ground game really got going for Seattle in that one. They had 190 yards rushing. That's a game where afterwards, Dominican Sue said the run defense was terrible. They needed to get better, and they did. They bounced back nicely. They shut down, I think it was the Broncos the following week. They only allowed 60 yards rushing. Since then, it's been 100 yards in each of the past three games, but that's manageable. It's easy to, I mean, teams rush for 100 yards seemingly every week now. So that's definitely manageable, and they just need to lock down the Seahawks this week as far as the running game goes. Chris Carson, Mike Davis, even Rashad Penny. They have a lot of good players there that can run the ball, that can handle a heavy workload. They like to split it up a little bit. But that's going to be the key to this game, I think, is stopping that running game. It allows the Seahawks to keep the Rams' offense off the field. It keeps the ball out of Todd Gurley's hands, and it wears down the defense, both up the middle and then in the secondary with having to tackle those physical runners. So I would say that's one of the keys to the game. The Rams have won five of the last seven against Seattle, so they do have their number of late, but that doesn't mean anything heading into Sunday, where the spread is 10 points, but Seattle looks like it's a better team than some people are giving them credit for. One of the other key stats from the last time these two teams met was on third down. The Seahawks were 7 for 12, which again, prolonged drives allowed them to win the time of possession battle and kept offense on the field while wearing down the Rams defense and keeping Jared Goff and Todd Gurley on the sidelines. So another key is going to be getting off of the field on third down and really hopefully getting the offense back on the field. So we'll be previewing this game on the Rams Wire. We'll be talking about it at length, matchups to watch, stats to know, things like that. So be sure to check out the site and follow us on Twitter, like I said, at the Rams Wire. We'll keep you guys updated throughout the week on that. So that's going to do it for today's episode. Once again, thanks for listening. You can follow me on Twitter at Kim DeSilva. You can follow us on Twitter at the Rams Wire. And best of luck to the Rams this weekend against Seattle, and hopefully they'll move to 9-1 and further strengthen their grip on that NFC West lead.